I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies, a travel story show on KVSH 101.9. And today we have a dear friend named Larkin Harrington. She is a Seattle native, an avid nomadic traveler. She has a singing voice from the angels. Larkin, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm great.
So you have spent a lot of time in Japan. Is that mostly where you've spent time abroad traveling?
Mostly. I'd say of all my travels, I've spent the most time in Japan.
So we're going to hear a beautiful story that she wrote for us today about her time there as a young person. Well, she's still a young person, but a younger person. Larkin.
It was the fall of 2008 in Kumamoto, a rural prefecture on the southernmost island of Japan, Kyushu. The name Kumamoto loosely translates to the origin of the bear. However, the name is not truly in reference to the existence of bears in the region, but to another reading of the kanji character used to write it. I have always loved the name and romanticized it in my mind. I pictured ancient Japanese bears trundling through the mountains and countryside. The city's mascot, Kumamon, is even a bear, and was recently established as the most popular and cutest prefecture mascot. Rightfully so, I may add. At the time when this story takes place, I was meant to be starting high school, though I was not as thrilled by this notion as were many of my peers. School never made much sense to me, as I had been a homeschooled child up until middle school and had practiced studying on my own. The idea of beginning quote-unquote higher education did not excite me, very much so the opposite. I knew I was in for a struggle. My family has deep emotional ties to Japan due to my late brother, my namesake, who was treated there, in a small city in Kumamoto, as a matter of fact. I had been studying Japanese, and I liked it very much. It seemed to come naturally. The clear structure and grammar just make sense to me. My other brother happened to be teaching English in Kumamoto through JET, the Japanese Exchange and Teaching Program. I first visited him there at age 13, and I fell quickly in love with the region, the people, the culture, the quiet rice paddies terraced along the hills surrounding my brother's home in Uto, the food, the trains, the many rolling mountains, and the smell. I am very bad with dates, times, etc., but I know this story takes place in the fall purely because of one smell in particular. Autumn in Japan, especially in rural areas, is heralded by the blooming of the kinmokusei, osmanthus fragrans, or fragrant olive, a tree originating in China and supposedly introduced to Japan around the beginning of the Edo period. Its beautiful orange blossoms emit one of the sweetest yet most subtle aromas that I now have come to associate with the coming of October, clear, crisp air, and a feeling of home. I have read that the tree has struggled in more polluted urban areas, and that it is hard to catch its scent, which is hard for me to believe as I feel I could track a tree a mile away. I could follow the scent to the blossoming tree and just bask in it. One of the many wondrous blessings of rural living, I suppose. So on the day in question, I know it was fall time. The ambrosia of kinmokusei firm in my memory. During my second foray to Japan, I was lucky enough to live with the family of one of my brother's fellow teachers at the school, a math teacher, quite brilliant and wonderfully odd. His family still holds a firm, warm place in my heart. His wife, half German, tall, strong, and powerful, taught piano and opera. She is a beautiful singer in her own right and quite an unrelenting force. Their daughters are beautiful and smart. The youngest took more so after her mother. I saw the same spark of resilience and spirit in her eyes. The elder is obviously brilliant, fastidious, like a well-composed piano piece. I woke up to her practice piano playing every morning during my stay. Papa-san, or Baba-sensei, would chain smoke out the oven vent while Mama would cook. He would grin sheepishly over her shoulder at me while she shook her head, annoyed. She loved him deeply, it was clear, but she was often annoyed. I remember staying up late with her, telling ghost stories and learning new words. As I was not there through any sort of exchange program, but through the graciousness of those my brother and I met, I was able to take full advantage of the freedom that came with my situation and of any and all opportunities that may have arisen. I was allowed to attend high school at the all-girls high school, Daiichi Koko, one of the most prestigious high schools in the region. High school is extremely difficult in Japan and highly competitive. It is more similar to American university in this way, which made it even more strange that I was allowed to pretend to be a student, wearing a hand-me-down seifuku, or uniform, trying desperately to keep up with the fast-paced Japanese that was honestly soaring loudly over my head. I tended to accept the classwork and immediately begin trying to dissect it with my handy electronic dictionary. Drowning, truly, but enjoying every second of it. I would bike to school every day in my hot, unrelenting polyester uniform. It's amazing the self-awareness and self-respect you gain as a young person, being told to navigate a new city, town, country on your bike, and to just do it. I went everywhere on my bike. A Honda. I miss it. I did extracurricular activities with the other girls, sports, dancing, and my chosen naginata, an ancient form of weapon meant only for women and girls. I helped out on a small farm that taught young people about the importance of agriculture, run by a crotchety old man who secretly loved all of the children who came through to dig up carrots and potatoes, and who, though coming across as highly irritated by my entire presence, always overburdened my bike basket with far too much loving produce. I also was lucky enough to volunteer at a local preschool. Preschool in Japan is just chaos. Children are given a short burst of time to be their crazy, childlike, explosive selves before entering middle school, which begins the rigorous, unrelenting training that is an inherent part of the Japanese school system. It may have been complete insanity, but man, were those kids cute. On the day in question, I was on my way to my shift at the preschool, riding the train, my favorite train, the Midori line. Midori means green, and this beautiful old rickety train was the deepest, most beautiful shade of green. It had a perfect sway side to side, the handhold swaying in time through tunnels of vines and trees, like a fairy tale. My first ride, I was terribly anxious. Will I know my stop? Will I be lost forever? But I did not yet know the kindness and selflessness of Japanese people. All you have to do is ask. And in my hand-me-down uniform, I asked politely for the Sumiyoshi stop. He kindly told me that he would let me know. On this day, it was raining heavily. I got off at my stop and opened my umbrella. Along my walk to the preschool, weaving between houses, along quiet streets, I heard the most plaintive, quiet cry. It was either a child or a cat, and my head was already on a swivel. I spotted him almost immediately, a bright white kitten with brown spots. He was tiny. He was wailing his way towards me through the pouring rain, and my heart fell through my guts. He knew I was going to help him, and he strutted right up. I dropped my umbrella on the ground and scooped him up in my arms. Covered in fleas, a torn lip, his ears were dirty. What was I to do? I decided to bring him with me to the preschool. The women who ran the place were none too pleased, but they knew me, and I think at that point they knew I was crazy. People in Japan don't tend to go out of their way for animals. That's for the weirdos. They let me go into the back, away from the children, so that I could rinse him off. It didn't do much good. He was still covered in fleas. I had agreed to work the day, so it was up to the few attendants at the front to watch him. I pleaded with them. Only at the end of the day did I realize that they had constructed a strange cardboard barricade to keep him in the entryway. It had not worked well, and they were frantic. I felt bad, but also was incredibly amused by their flustered exclamations of a wild, mangy cat on the loose. In the end, I had to take this little kitten home with me. My homestay family had some kitten rescues of their own, which is rather rare in Japan. So I felt my sob story would at least be heard. I humbly asked the owner of the preschool for her thoughts. I really think she just wanted him out of there, so she offered me a pink plastic picnic basket. Something I would have drooled over as a child. It had two lids on either side that folded upwards. Very reminiscent of a real picnic basket, but very, very pink and very, very plastic. So I stuffed the kitten unceremoniously into the Barbie basket and waited in the driving rain for my Midori Line train, knowing full well that animals were not allowed. I managed to scramble on, my new kitten blessedly keeping quiet, and sit in my seat. The train was mostly empty, but for an older businessman, obviously going home from work, and a few others in the adjacent car. Exhausted, businesslike, and in my situation, a real problem, I prayed to whatever god, goddess, or spirit was listening that my charge would keep quiet. But of course, he didn't. The tiniest, yet clearest mule then came out of my pink basket, obscure and strange enough as it was without cat sounds emitting from it. I shot my gaze to the businessman in horror, knowing I would be sold out. I locked with his startled, bemused eyes and expected the worst. What I received was a slow, worn upturning of the corners of his mouth. His eyes narrowed, his smile grew, and he nodded almost imperceptibly at me. And that is how I brought Hakuryu home to my Japanese mother, my little white dragon.
Larkin, thank you so much for writing that story. It's so beautiful. And knowing you and imagining a little Larkin on a bus with this little pink basket with a kitten in it. For those of you that don't know Larkin, she is a crazy animal person. And she actually works at a vet clinic in Seattle as a vet technician. And recently, most recently, helped us with one of our own babies who was not feeling so good.
Maxie.
So she's got a real heart of gold and a real sucker for all the four-legged friends that are out there in the world. And she also has a real Vashon connection. She did used to live here, and her brother, the one that she talks about in this story, is married to a woman from Japan, and they have a little girl here.
From Kumamoto as well.
Yeah. And they run Artisan Electric.
Artisan Electric.
Yep.
That's great.
Evan is his name. So I have a couple questions, obviously, as this is what the show is about. First off, what's the name of that tree again?
Kinmokusei.
God, it just your description of it is so beautiful. I want to know what it smells like.
It's really hard to describe. I try to explain it as like the smell of Christmas, but that doesn't really touch base with a lot of people.
So it's like piney?
No, it's really sweet and almost like honey.
Oh, God, it sounds so beautiful.
Yeah, it's really, and I think in my search for it, I think it's also the bark. It's not just the blossoms itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so far reaching. You can smell it in the autumn, well, like at least in the, you know, smaller areas. You can smell it from far away and just wander trails until you find it.
Oh, sounds so beautiful.
Yeah.
And obviously you live there, so you would have seen things like cherry blossoms in Japan, which everybody in the world pines to see at least one time in their life.
And it's so fleeting. And it's a huge party. It's called Hanami. And it's just a party in its own right, you know.
Well, you're going to have to come on another time and do a story just on that.
Okay.
It's interesting that you say that people in Japan don't really have cats as house pets. That's probably why they have so many cat cafes.
Yes, indeed.
Is it because there's not space, like in cities?
Right. In cities, the larger cities, especially, you know, Tokyo and, you know, Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm. But do rural people, I mean, out in...
As a rule...
No, rural.
Oh, rural. Yeah, well, rural people... The strange thing about Japanese people's feelings towards animals is they're more... They're workers, you know, mm-hmm. and that feeling has changed. When I lived there, I worked for one of the only non-kill shelters in Kumamoto existing at all.
Wow.
They tend to spend their lives outside. They're guard animals. There are tons of stray cats, Nora Neko. They just wander everywhere. They're more just coexisting as opposed to family,
mm-hmm.
Which is, a you know, of course exists.
Sure.
We're all over the place, us animal people. But
yeah,
it's less so here. You know, we don't buy special couches for cats in Japan, right? They live outside.
Although I have seen online that there are miniature little couches coming out of Japan for cats specifically.
Oh, no.
I think that maybe there might be some cat lovers on the rise over there.
It's definitely happening. Yeah.
I hope so anyway.
Yeah.
So are you still friendly? Do you still know the family?
I still know
them.
Is
your little white dragon still around?
He went to a farm.
That's never a good sign when somebody says an animal went to a farm.
He went to a farm in the sky. No, we knew somebody. We were really friendly with someone out there that Evan, my brother, helped me arrange this situation for this silly, bumbling white cat that ended up being very large and ruling the roost on this farm. So he lived happily ever after.
Well, in the beginning of the story, you mentioned your late brother who
yes.
went there for treatment. He went there for cancer treatment.
Well, yes, for experimental treatment to support his liver. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he would certainly be proud of you today, my dear.
Thank you.
You've done a beautiful job. I did have just a couple more questions for you.
Yeah.
What is the naginata that you were talking about?
Naginata
as
is...
As I butcher that.
No. You said it perfectly well. It's a long spear with a very sharp, curved knife at the end that women were trained to use in small, you know, cities. The men, I believe in the feudal era, would go off and fight battles and protect the town or city. Mm-hmm. But women were left behind with the children, and they were not left without weapons and without their own weapon art form, which is a lot like a dance. And it's really cool. But it's this probably, I think, 6 foot long spear that you learn to, you know, basically
handle.
Keep aggressors at bay with. It's a very much a woman-based weapon because you are holding people away from you. But you could also decapitate them if you so choose.
If you so choose. Well, I do not want to run into anybody with their... A naginata.
No.
Well, although I do have a lot of images of like a naginata woman in like traditional costume being super badass. And
oh, yeah.
That would be beautiful.
It's really cool.
But I'd like to be her friend.
Yes. You want to be her friend.
Not on the other
Don't
end.
Threaten her kids.
So when's the last time that you were in Japan?
Gosh. That would have been the last... 6 months. Oh, no. That I was there for my interim at high school for about 3 months, and then your visa runs out if you're not through any sort of exchange program.
Oh, sure.
So every 3 months you have to renew your visa, which at one point I did just take a hop, skip, and jump over to Korea.
And then came back.
But
God, that sounds rough, Larkin.
It's so
go
hard.
To Korea.
I know, just,
eat
you know.
Some kimchi.
Oh, yes.
Some kimbap.
Oh,
and bop
my gosh,
around.
Yes. And all of the, and bop around. Yeah. And meet all the kitty cats over there. Yeah, so I did have to come back to the U.S. I went back my sophomore year of high school because I got my GED. As you probably could tell from my story, high school didn't really work out.
Who needs it?
Who needs it?
Overrated.
So I went back and lived with my brother and his soon-to-be wife and did even more.
Akiko.
Akiko, yes.
She's
yes.
a lovely lady.
She's so lovely. Mm-hmm. And their amazing daughter, Juno.
Who we love, who's getting so big now.
So big.
Larkin, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Megan.
Yeah, you bet.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much, Vashon Island. This is Megan Hastings with the Cats and Jammer Follies. Stay tuned for next time.